Blog Talk Radio.
They are not trying to be part of the American way of life. They are not trying to be part of our culture. They are here with an agenda to make Islam the law of the land. Of course, not all Muslims are like that. But we've been infiltrated with this kind of agenda. America has to wake up, because we are strangling ourselves with our political correctness.
What's going on? What's going on? Good evening, Radio Jihadists. You're back with ACT Radio Jihad, the patriotic resistance movement. I'm Vito Esposito, and thank you for joining us tonight. Our call-in number is...
Area code 347-857-1380. Radio Jihad.
I love that. I'm joined by that no-pork eating American lover, Alan Kay. Alan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, Vito. I want to wish all of our listeners a happy Easter and a happy Passover as well, or last day of Passover tonight.
Oh, yes, happy Passover to all of our... Jewish friends out there, and I want to say hello to Hasidus in the chat room. Salam to you, too. Salami and cheese. Well, Al, I know that you weren't here last week for a day, and the reason why was you were doing a bit of traveling, and you got an interesting insight as to what's going on. What's going on in Dearborn, Michigan? With the Terry Jones fiasco. But before we get into that, I just want to mention one thing. There's an article, and I forgot where I got it from, and my apologies to the author of this. Muslim group threatens to turn Royal Wedding Day into a nightmare. April 19, 2011, London police say a Muslim anti-war group has been denied permission to protest outside Westminster Abbey when Prince William marries Catherine Middleton there on April 29th. The group Muslims Against Crusades, well, there's your answer right there, Muslims Against Crusades, still living in the 7th century, or actually in the 9th century, had their application denied Tuesday, but are in talks with authorities to hold their protest in another location. The group calls Prince William one of the biggest advocates of British imperialism and accuses him of direct involvement with murderous British military. Oh, the victim card, Al, even in the United Kingdom, huh?
Wah, wah, wah.
Prince William is an officer in the British Royal Air Force. And, you know, this British imperialism, he's a prince. You dumbass. If MAC, that's the Muslims Against Crusades, and you know what, Al? When was the last time there was the Crusades? I can't remember. Are the Crusades being resurrected by the Vatican or something? Muslims Against Crusades. You know, that's like saying, let's see, what can you say? That's America's for arcs, you know? Let's just talk about, talk about living in the past, huh? If MAC is not allowed to protest, it has threatened to turn the day into what's called a nightmare. Well, that's fantastic, and they're still negotiating with these guys, huh?
Who's negotiating?
It says here that the British authorities are negotiating with them.
Why are they even talking to these people? There's nothing to negotiate.
Bingo. Ding, 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 ding. You hit it on the head, man. Why are they talking to them?
They shouldn't even be talking. They should be telling them, look, you're threatening violence. You do anything that even resembles a threat of violence, we're going to come down on you so hard your head will spin.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
That's right. Bye-bye, you sons of bitches, if you do anything. Period. Draw the line in the sand and then enforce it. End of story.
Exactly. Exactly. Draw the line in the sand. I mean, they can relate to the sand since they're against crusades. So you draw a line in the sand, you say enough is enough. I mean, they are threatening violence in a sovereign country that is peaceful.
Well,
according to the
yeah, go on. I'm sorry.
According to the BBC, the group's website calls on Muslims to disrupt the wedding, describing senior members of the royal family as enemies of Allah and his messenger. Okay, Al, this is what this triggers. Now, what was, we've seen the emails, and maybe a lot of people have not seen the emails, but when Muslims are less than 1% of a population, they're amenable, and they're not assimilating into society, but they kind of go with the flow, and they got this peaceful, and they get these like slumlord Faisal Abdul Rauf, who's soft spoken, and you know they get this, oh, they want to be all inclusive. When they get to 5 to 10%, that changes. Now, why in God's name, and not Allah God, but why in God's name would they threat on the website to disrupt the wedding because they're enemies to Allah? You're a guest in the United Kingdom. You're a guest in England. You're a guest in London. There has not been violence, with the exception of the problem with the Irish Republican Army, the Irish, help me out there, I totally went blank.
The Protestants and the IRA going at it.
Yeah, the IRA, thank you. There has been problems in the past with them. But my goodness, you know, you as a Muslim, not you, Al, but you as a Muslim are a guest in the country. And, you know, you may have been born there, but how dare you go into the Western society, a free society that's opened their arms to you while you're siphoning off from the welfare system, and you then threaten a royal wedding that is probably going to be one of the most, at this time, in my opinion, at this time, this is what the world needs to see, something on a positive nature. Because what Muslims bring to this world right now is very negative. All the fighting, all the killings, the uprisings, and it's supposedly this democratic uprising, but we all know the difference now. We're seeing firsthand what democracy means inside of Islamic countries. It doesn't mean the same thing as we in the West understand. But to say that they're enemies of Allah and his messenger, you're a guest in the United Kingdom. You know what? What they should have started doing back on April 19th, and certainly earlier than that, but it's starting to deport all Muslims now. And I think Steve Klein called it, damn, deport all Muslims now. How dare you, as guests of the United Kingdom, make threats against the royal family and the people that will be attending that wedding? They've never been a problem for the last 100 years, but as soon as Muslims gain that percentage that they talked about, suddenly they want to create havoc and chaos. But you know what? That's what Muslims do. They create havoc and chaos. And no, I'm not beating up on Muslims, but this is getting to be a little bit ridiculous, and people should be outraged, especially the English, excuse me, who have tolerated this totalitarian ideology on their own soil, and now they've come out to the forefront, and this Muslim group called the Muslims Against Crusades, I guess, I don't know how long it's been in existence, but they are now calling for disruption of the royal wedding because they're enemies to Allah and his messenger. That is intolerance.
Well, there's actually, Vito, the enemies of Allah. That's an intriguing use of words, because there is some Islamic doctrine that gives those words that weren't picked by random. They were actually used, and it's called Tabara. T-A-B as in Bravo, A-R-R-A, and that's Arabic. And it's a Sharia Muslim doctrine that refers to the obligation, disassociation with those who oppose Allah and those who caused harm to and were enemies of the Prophet of Muhammad or his family. Now, technically, the British are considered enemies of Allah because they've sent troops into Afghanistan and Iraq to kill Muslims on foreign soil, as they believe they're doing. Now, every Shia Muslim believes it to be their duty to disassociate themselves from the enemies of Allah and his messengers. That is called the doctrine of Tabara.
Now, Al, why then is, and you know what, I've since found out that guess who is going to be at the forefront holding hands with the Muslims against Crusades?
Mr. Lady Gaga?
Chaudhary. Close. Huh? Chaudhary. You remember Chaudhary?
Yeah, Chowderhead.
Chowderhead. You know, this is what he says. While the royal wedding is certainly a target for those people who want to cause havoc in Britain, Chowdhury said, as a Muslim residing in Britain, he lives under a covenant of security and as such is not allowed to carry out such an operation. However, he said, there is a difference of opinion. And while he stopped short of supporting a violent attack by those living outside Britain, he did say, I do believe that a Muslim, whenever he is being attacked or whenever his land is being occupied and whenever his honor is being violated, he has a divine duty to defend himself. Now, my question is, why hasn't Scotland Yard deported this guy? Why hasn't the United Kingdom rounded him up and sent him to some remote island? Because obviously, Chowdhury is part of the problem in Islam, and he's allowed to spew his venom in a Western democracy, and he's actually endorsing, while saying he doesn't believe it should happen, but he's endorsing some sort of violent act or a disruption or havoc, as he called it, in Great Britain.
Well, all I can say is, oh my goddy, do we have Mr. Chowderhead on line two?
Oh my goddy,
welcome, goddy. How are you doing today?
I'm licking my brothers.
And licking my salami to you, good fellow.
How you doing, gentlemen?
Good, goddy.
Outstanding.
Happy Passover
so
to you,
Vito, belated. What are you ranting about now? You want Chowdhury to be evicted from the UK?
Well, yes, I do. And I'll tell you why, Gotti. Because we were just talking about a story that appeared. Muslim group threatens to turn royal wedding day into a nightmare. And the group's name is Muslims Against Crusades. I get a charge out of that. Against Crusades. You know, they're living like, you know, 1,300 years in the past. But Muslims Against Crusades. But guess who's aligned themselves with Muslims Against Crusades? And that's one, Chaudhary. Now,
wow.
Chaudhary has caused nothing but havoc in the United Kingdom. This man has done everything he can in his own power to incorporate Sharia laws, and successfully, mind you, in the United Kingdom. He is a disruption to society. He believes in the totalitarian ideology called Islam. And frankly, as a Muslim who condones the acts of violence, and of course now he's talking about the new buzzword in Islam, ladies and gentlemen, the new buzzword for Islamists around the world is occupation. Okay, now that you've occupied our land, therefore it is justified for us to engage in some sort of havoc to defend ourselves. That's what he's saying. Now, you're occupying the United Kingdom's land, and obviously you cannot assimilate into society, and with such a prestigious event that's going to be held on April the 29th, you condone the creation of havoc because Prince William he's an enemy to Allah and his messenger. And Chowderhead says that I do believe that a Muslim, whenever he is being attacked, or whenever his land is being occupied, or whenever his honor is being violated, he has a divine duty to defend himself. Now, that sounds a bit seditious for the United Kingdom, and also it sounds a little bit like he's on a warpath, and that is dangerous.
Yeah, I look at it from the other side of the coin, though. I think that having him speak English and be a mouthpiece in the Western media is to our benefit. As long as, and I will add this, as long as he doesn't incite violence, which evidently by siding himself with this group he has. But I know you understand where I'm coming from. I've seen him actually argue with the wife of Imam Faisal Abu Rauf, the Ground Zero Mosque, telling her that she was a liar because she was misrepresenting Sharia law. And every time this man opens his mouth, he says exactly what we say every week, and it's coming from the mouth of an Islamic scholar, it's like, great, let him speak. Let him tell the truth about Sharia. Let him tell the truth about Islam. Let him tell the truth about the Hadith. I have no issue with it, provided he doesn't incite violence. And up until now, he really hasn't, unless it's been, you know, things that I haven't read because they've been in Arabic. I have not seen him come out and openly incite violence. But if he's siding himself with a group that is saying they're going to create a day of havoc, that's something new.
Well, you're
sure.
Right on. Yeah, I mean, Tommy Hunt, Hasidus in the chat room agree with you completely, and I do as well, because as much as he is annoying, he does speak the truth. He doesn't practice taqiyya like so many
exactly.
other Islamists here. He'll tell you exactly what he thinks. And Hasidus had it right. He said, Chowderhead is he's the gift that keeps on giving. Now, I added Chowderhead.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. When I watched, I think it was a CNN special with, I don't remember the newscaster's name. It'll come
I'm
to me.
I'm on four.
Anyway,
Christy, I'm on four.
Exactly. Christine, I'm on four. And when they did the round table, you know, no ground zero mosque, and they had him on a satellite feed, and he blatantly said to Faisal Abdul's wife, what you're doing is performing taqiyya. I nearly lost it. I think I had a cup of coffee that shot across the room because I was in mid-sip. It was just beautiful because he does. He was siding with Robert Spencer, and he was siding with all the people on that side of the panel that were talking about the truth behind Sharia. And he was saying, you're absolutely right. And I loved every minute of it.
You know, I know that he said then, why isn't the sister wearing a hijab? And so she's offensive in that regard. I have a problem, though, because you have a situation where we have seen, we in the United States are seeing firsthand what's happening in Europe. You know, you have some countries like the Netherlands now are becoming more aggressive towards their own nationalism and requiring history and requiring a language issue to try to combat the movement and spread of Islam, also the welfare system. But you see what's going on in the United Kingdom. And the United Kingdom has tried to appease Muslims for the last 10 years plus. And what we have seen in the last 3 years is an escalation of a lack of assimilation by Islam, and they're only getting stronger. It troubles me because the Organization of Islamic Conference, which is an arm of the United Nations, is also continuing with their thread about limiting the free speech in the Western democracies. Now, there's a situation now where the world needs some positive news. And we all, if we're old enough, we remember the royal wedding of 1981. And, you know, I didn't much like it because, you know, my fiancé at the time really liked that wedding, and there's no way in hell I was even going to come close to providing even a horse, okay? But you know what? It's a prestige, and it's a pomp and circumstance. It's great. You know, the world needs that. After watching what's going on in the Middle East and how the animals conduct themselves in the Middle East, the world needs some positive news. But who's rearing their ugly head over this again? Who is rearing their ugly head? It's Islam. And supposedly the groups that are involved in this are, quote, the moderate Muslims. So now are the conclave of Islamic extremists merged onto the United Kingdom, and they're the only ones that are going to be involved? No. It also includes moderate Muslims. So the sanitizing of the Muslims that are going to be possibly affecting the outcome of this royal wedding is another situation of why are we sanitizing what Islam is? They're showing their true colors.
Hey. Well, I hope that no one on either side gets hurt, but I hope they make one hell of a ruckus. I hope they create havoc to the point that the world that will be watching that wedding probably darn close to the same amount of millions of people that watched Princess Diana get married back in 81. I hope that the world sees the true colors of Islam, as long as nobody gets hurt. You know, let them burn tires, let them make a speech, let them block the roads, whatever. As long as there's no violence, I don't have an issue with it, because this country needs to open their eyes. And as we say every week, week in and week out, look across the Atlantic for what's going on over there. That's what's coming here. And no better way, a picture's worth a thousand words.
Great point, Gotti. That's a very good point. Scotland Yard said it had no intelligence of a specific terrorist threat to the wedding, so was not currently in a position to impose anti-terrorism stop and search powers, said the BBC's Danny Shore. Meanwhile, the English Defense League, a group that campaigns against radical Islamists, has requested a permit to hold counter-demonstrations if the MAC protest gets approval. And I bet you they're going to be deemed a hate group, right?
Oh, that would be a mess. I hope they don't get approval. No offense to the friends of the EDL out there. I have friends, but that would be a mess. If you had a counter-protest with the EDL at the same time, oh, boy. Yeah, that would be a mess.
Assistant Commissioner Lynn Owens said, "What we will be doing is making sure that no protest disrupts that celebration for the royal family. What we have to do whenever we're deciding about whether there can be a protest, if they're asking to protest in the area around the parliament, it is defined by a very set definition of law. We have to authorize a demonstration, but we can put conditions on that demonstration. It's that negotiation process that we're engaged in at the moment, but people should be absolutely reassured that it won't disrupt the day and we'll have a very safe and happy celebratory event." I hope so. I really do hope so. But like you said, Gotti, if something, God forbid, does happen, it is the world's responsibility to take note as to who you are dealing with. And every country needs to open their eyes. Every Western democracy needs to open their eyes and understand exactly where the violence, the havoc, was created, and who's responsible for it.
Exactly. Oh, boy. Such a lovely news item you bring us, Vito. And I thought we were going to talk about butterflies and squirrels.
Kumbaya, my lord.
But it's funny because... it's funny because what they're doing with this royal wedding... It's a political statement. They did it in Spain, if you recall, when they blew up the train station in Spain.
Absolutely.
And they changed the course of an election by threatening violence. And that's what they're doing with this royal wedding, is threatening violence, regardless of all the outreach that Prince Charles has done, all the demitude that he has heaped upon the Islamic community in Britain. This is how they repay his good nature and kindness.
Great point. That is an absolute great point, Al. I mean, you talk about the Prince Charles and what the royal family has done as an outreach. That is a wonderful point. And not to mention that Diana, wasn't she banging a Muslim? The guy that owns, what is it, Harrow?
Oh, yeah, Duty.
Yeah, an Egyptian and no less.
Okay. I'm sorry, ladies and gentlemen, for that. I didn't mean to bring up that.
He meant banging boots. He was trying to be polite, yeah.
Engaging in coitus.
Shagging. He was shagging royalty.
Shagging royalty.
That's how the Islamists who live there are repaying the royal family for all their kindness. So it seems to me the lesson here is that no matter how much you appease, how much you try to foster goodwill and friendship, when the time comes for action or a political action is needed through the threat of violence, you can rest assured that the Muslim community will not miss a beat and will jump on that violence to achieve a political end at a drop of a hat.
You know, and you actually just brought up a good point there, Vito, all kidding aside. aside from the fact that the person she was dating, and rumor has it that she may very well have married, was an Egyptian, look at the organization and the charity that Diana founded, because the Muslims owe quite a bit to her. And if nothing else, they should show some respect to her son. She was so out there and just so big on cleaning up landmines that had been left behind for years that were the source of maiming and death of Muslim children the world over. She was so big on going in and cleaning up these landmines, if you remember. That was her big baby. That was her charity. She started that. And, you know, they have so much that they owe this woman. So many people owe their lives to her in Muslim countries as well as non-Muslim countries. You think they'd show a little respect. But, yeah, you know, so be it.
Yeah, our landmines, you know.
Well,
hey, speaking of assimilation. Well, you know what? And, she, you know, she was heralded for that, and rightly so. And again, the royal family gets dumped on for that. So, and her son, who the both boys, you know, were adoring of their mother, and you know,
yeah,
they picked up on the charitableness and the graciousness of their mother, and this is the thanks that Muslims are going to bestow upon the family. This is great, you know.
Yeah, and you think they'd understand the royalty aspect of it a little bit better, given the history of Islam and the way their caliphate and their people run. I mean, look at all the so-called democracies, yeah, right, that are nothing more than royalty or dictatorships. I mean, you still have a king in Jordan. I mean, you know, they should understand. Well, I'm preaching to the choir. You'd think they would understand it a little bit better, but be that as it may, it doesn't matter. The Brits are involved in the war in Afghanistan and Iraq, and therefore they're in Muslim land, and therefore it gives them a right to do this. So, you know, in their
mind. Oh, hey, wait. Gotti, wait. Who was it that enlisted and sought out the help of the United Kingdom, of France and the United States? Who was it? The Arab League. The Arab League requested help for the Libyan, quote, rebels, so that the they could combat Muammar Gaddafi. Oh, okay. So now you want the help and you want the blood, sweat, and toil of the British, and then this is how you're going to repay the
exactly.
British monarchy in England.
They want their baba ganoush and to eat it too.
Well, speaking
exactly.
of assimilation, I don't know if everybody was following this, but last week, there was an issue up in Dearborn, Michigan, with the esteemed Pastor Terry Jones, who sought a permit to protest across the street from the largest mosque in the Detroit area. Well, we have firsthand coverage of this event, and Alan's going to enlighten us on his amazing trip to Dearbornistan during the tumultuous times of Pastor Terry Jones. And quite frankly, I think unbeknownst to Terry Jones, he has exposed probably a real big hole in Islam's ability to assimilate into the American society, and how the enclaves of Muslims, how an enclave of Muslims will kind of push aside this document called the United States Constitution in favor of Sharia law. Is that about a good intro? Is that accurate?
Vito, you hit the nail on the head. I was fortunate enough to be able to go up to Dearborn and witness this event. An event is a proper word for it, firsthand. Sat through the whole trial. We filmed the whole thing. We had a chance to do an hour-and-a-half interview at the Islamic Center of America and got some very interesting information there as well. We learned how Dearborn is broken up. But going on what you said, Vito, Terry Jones and Wayne Sapp, and this is what we're going to – this is what we learn, and then we'll go and we'll break it down and go into the different components of it. But Terry Jones and Wayne Sapp knowingly or unknowingly expose how far the city of Dearborn, Michigan will go to advocate on behalf of their Muslim majority. Now, in Dearborn, there's roughly 100,000 people. 46,000 are Muslim. So it is a Muslim majority because when you break the other minorities down to their various percentages, no one approaches 46%. So we expose how far the city of Dearborn will go to advocate on behalf of their Muslim majority to enforce Sharia or Islamic law or Sharia Islamia through fear and threats of violence. That's the key point here, through fear and threats of violence. Now, Terry Jones and Wayne Sapp challenged the Islamists. Terry Jones and Wayne Sapp challenged the Islamist machine in Dearborn and exposed how we as Americans must stand up to the Islamists inside Dearborn who threaten violence to achieve a Sharia-compliant outcome. Now, the Sunni and Wahhabists and Salafists in southeast Dearborn may not like this, but their Shia neighbors to the north, they control the Dearborn political machine. So it's all about threats of violence to achieve a political end.
You're talking about the Muslim enclave to the north of Dearborn, or the northern part of Dearborn?
How Dearborn is split up. Dearborn is made up of Iraqi Muslims, Lebanese Muslims, Palestinian Muslims, Yemeni Muslims, Shia Muslims, Persian Muslims, and Dearborn is made up of roughly 14 different groups that control various parts of the city. Now, these 14 groups, from good sources, are controlled by the Muslim Brotherhood, and there's 14, each. The Muslim Brotherhood has one leader in each group. And then that's how they control the city. Now, the largest and most influential group are the Shia, who control the Islamic Center of America, and that's where Terry Jones and Wayne Sapp were going to have their protest, not to burn a Quran, but simply to have a protest against jihad and Sharia.
So, now, Pastor Jones, he went out and he sought. He went through the proper channels, right, to go up to Dearborn and stand and to file for a permit to protest. Is that correct? And it wasn't a violent protest.
No, not at all. In fact, according to court testimony, there was another group that was unnamed that had originally planned on going to Dearborn to protest in front of this mosque. They submitted to the pressure from the city of Dearborn. And when the permit to protest was denied, they went along their way. They didn't fight it. However, Terry Jones said, no, we will go anyway, regardless if they issue us a permit or not. And that's where the controversy started. And then from there, it led into a courtroom drama with a jury. Jury decided, no protest, and that's where we're at now.
Now, wait a minute. Why did Reverend Terry Jones have to go before a jury? He wasn't arrested, was he?
No, actually, Terry Jones did nothing. He did nothing. That's what's so amazing, is he didn't do a thing, yet there was the breach. It's called a breach of the peace, and it dates back to an 1857 law on the books in Dearborn. And if there is a remote possibility that a group or person will commit a breach of the peace, then they can, in fact, be arrested before they actually do anything. And
Alan,
does
this not sound somewhat familiar to Dave and the Act 17 group?
It's interesting you bring that up, Gotti, because there are a lot of similarities. And the one common theme is police chief Haddad was instrumental in getting David Wood arrested, and police chief Haddad was one of the primary participants and players in getting that permit denied to Pastor Jones.
Interesting. Not surprising, but interesting.
So
Yeah.
So who represented Terry Jones in this court? Since he had to go to court now, why kind of go back? Why did Terry Jones have to go before a court? And why did the jury decide that he had to get a 20? He was charged with a $25,000 bond. Him and also Wayne Todd each were I don't know, is it charged the right word?
Yeah.
And in effect, though, the judge reduced it down to $1.
That was towards the end of the trial. Prior to that, they had what's called a peace bond. Now, a peace bond is what the city of Dearborn calculated it would cost them to utilize city resources to manage the event if Terry Jones was to go in front of that mosque and protest. All five of them, he had only five people that were going to be going with him. A five people a protest does not make, but according to the city of Dearborn, they drew up their numbers based on 10,000 people showing up to the protest and creating a situation at the location, because there's only one ingress and one egress in and out of this altar road. Now, where the mosque is situated, there's churches on either side of it. It's called Altar Road. You got this huge mosque, 90,000 square feet. You've got three or four churches on either side of it. But you only have one road going in and out. So with all those people, the city of Dearborn believed that it would be a threat or a hazard, a potential liability and safety risk to have that many people there. So in order for them to manage it, they were going to charge Terry Jones $46,000 in order to bring in enough police, barricades, I think even a dump truck. Now, what that $46,000 was just a number that they came up with that was so high that nobody would pay it in order to stifle Mr. Jones's free speech.
Okay, Holger brought up a good point, let me just back up a second, okay, so that maybe everybody can follow.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? The media has done a tremendous disservice in reporting this whole event. Okay, now, Terry Jones had not conducted any type of protest or rally across the street from this mosque. He was out there seeking a permit, is that correct, to do that?
Yeah, he went through normal channels, got a permit, or applied for a permit that was denied.
Gotcha. He applied for a permit, but it was denied, and that's when the court issue got involved then, because
mm-hmm.
he had to take it to the next level? Is that right?
Well, he refused to pay the peace bond, and he still threatened to go out and protest. So based on this 1857 law, then they brought him in to the courtroom, because he said he's going to go out there and protest anyway. So they pulled out this law from 1857, and as I understand it, is that by threatening to do that, he threatened a breach of the peace. So with that, he was able. So as a threat of the breach of the peace, not by anything that he did, because he didn't threaten violence. Now, keep in mind, I'm not the biggest Terry Jones fan in the world before all this happened. But he didn't threaten anybody. He didn't even say he was going to burn a Koran. His main purpose was to go in front of the mosque and protest jihad and Sharia. And he put that into his documents that he gave to the city of Dearborn, which they denied for his protest permit.
So as Hasidus said, Terry Jones refused to pay the jizya, which was that number of, $45,000 that Police Chief Ron Haddad created for the 10,000 people that was supposed to be there.
Correct. Now you got to understand from the law enforcement's point of view, and this is the wrong point of, from law enforcement's point of view, they see a situation that could bring about a potential problem for the community, a risk or possibility of a problem or unrest within the community. Law enforcement is charged to make that risk go away in the easiest, most possible way. So is it easier to get rid of Pastor Jones, or is it easier to get rid of the Muslim community that has threatened violence and there were over 300 to 400 death threats against Terry Jones. So from a police, look at it from a police enforcement perspective, is it easier to get rid of Terry Jones and have the problem go away? Or is it easier to go after the Muslim community that is actually threatening the violence against Terry Jones?
Well, wait a minute. Wait, whoa, whoa, whoa. Nowhere was it reported that Terry Jones had 300 to 400 death threats against them. Him. So how credible were those death threats then?
Oh, well, in testimony with Police Chief Haddad, he stated that there were 300 to 400 death threats that were turned over to them, of which four were extremely credible, four were in the Detroit area. Of one of those four, there was one from Southeast Dearborn, which is from the Yemeni or the Wahhabi Salafist or Sunni section of Dearborn, and that was less than 10 miles from the courthouse. So, yeah, when you got that many death threats against a guy and they say they're going to kill him, yeah, you got a potentially explosive situation on your hand in Dearborn, Michigan.
Alan, I got a question. Now, they said that four or five of these death threats were credible. Are they going to bother to look into this, or are they just going to pretty much be like, well, it didn't happen and we got rid of the problem, so they're not going to follow up on these death threats?
Well, on the stand, Police Chief Haddad did say that there is an ongoing investigation regarding these death threats, so he could not comment on it at that time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I believe that.
What he does with that is, we can't determine that at this time. We can speculate.
Basically, the bottom line is, if you get enough people together, regardless of what group they're from, who make a threat of violence, we're just going to back down rather than standing up for our freedom of speech or our First Amendment rights to hold a protest by gathering the proper permits, because obviously there are permits involved. But rather than going through the motions and following the law and being able to protest and speak your mind and your right, we'll just back down because there's threats. That's really interesting. So if we get like 300 or 400 threats together against the next time Westboro Baptist Church wants to protest a soldier's funeral, are they going to tell them they don't have a permit to go to the funeral and protest?
Funny you mentioned the Westboro Baptist Church, because it also came out in testimony that the Church actually did protest on that same area where Pastor Jones was going to be speaking, but maybe 600 feet down from the mosque, and they were given the permit. They were allowed to protest. Now, according to court documents, they were protesting some gay thing rather than an Islamic thing. So they were protesting something about gay.
And of course, the Islamists would have no issue with that. Why would Islam have any problem with someone protesting homosexuality? So there's no problem there.
No, that's an interesting point. Yeah, that's true. So the Westboro Baptist Church was allowed to get the permit to protest. They had to protest. There was no problem, and everybody left, and life goes on.
Now, was the Westboro Baptist Church protesting against Islam?
No, they were protesting, from what I heard. I have not corroborated this information, but from what I heard from several sources was that it was a protest against some gay issue.
Were they calling Islam gay?
Well, I don't think they were advocating for the gay agenda, so I think they were against the gay agenda. And the Islamists, as Gotti said, are homophobic to the extreme, to where being homosexual was considered a crime in Sharia. So I think that they found like partners with the Westboro Baptist Church and and the Muslims on that one issue. Therefore, there was no problem from the Islamist community for them being there.
Oh, I love you. Oh, I love you.
Alan, did you see any synagogues in that area? You mentioned there were some churches around.
Well, interesting you mentioned that as well. There are no synagogues within the Dearborn district. or the city of Dearborn.
What if I'm shocked, you know, Dearborn Heights, and I'm not sure because I've never been out there how far it is, but my understanding is Dearborn Heights is a suburb of Dearborn proper. It's an extremely Jewish community, or at least once was. So,
yeah. You
know, it's very interesting what's going on out there as far as, you know, you have enough people. I mean, look at what they did with the Dearborn Public High School and the changing of the practice hours for the football team during Ramadan.
Oh, yeah. Fortson High School. We've talked about that, Vito, quite often.
Yeah.
Hezbollah
yeah.
High, they call it.
Hezbollah High.
Yep. Very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Tommy in the chat room, I guess, kind of echoed what Gotti was saying, and actually said, so the threats of violence are rewarded. The more they threaten, the more our rights are diminished. And wouldn't
exactly.
you say that that's probably true, Al?
Yeah, it's very true. In fact, Dearborn Police Chief Haddad testified that Al-Kazwini, he is the sheikh or imam of the Islamic Center of America, and he stated, quote, that for some members of his mosque, burning the Quran was considered a crime, close quote. Wayne County Assistant Prosecutor Robert Moran stated in the trial that Al-Kazwini said, burning the Quran is worse than 1,000 deaths. That's what the citizens of this society believe. Now we know here at the Radio Jihad Network, we know how the Muslim society is set up and how this is relevant, and that within the Muslim community, the imam controls the community. If the imam says you go out there and you protest, you protest. If the imam says you back off and do nothing, you back off and do nothing. Wouldn't you say that's correct?
Yep, absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, the imam's like the mayor of the town, but with a religious power over his community, because he is the sole religious voice. The community must listen to the imam and the edicts that the imam issues in order to remain as good Muslims and be viewed as good Muslims within the community, because it is a lack of honor or pride for you to go against the imam's wishes. As such, for a Muslim, it's a very dangerous game to go against the imam, because your family can go against you, your community can go against you. So 9 times out of 10, the community is going to go with the imam.
So you're saying that the imam mixes church and state? I thought that's what the liberals were so opposed to, the mixing of church and state.
Well, it's a community, and the imam says what goes. Now, when the imam makes quotes like burning the Quran is worse than 1,000 deaths, that's what the citizens of this society believe. And he says, he makes comments like that, he's almost inciting the threats of violence that we were talking about at the very beginning of the talk.
Al, you attended the hearing, the trial, whatever it is. Let me read a quote from that. This is Terry Jones. We are not criminals. We have respect for the law. We are coming there in peace, said Reverend Jones, told the jurors, adding that it was his right to speak against the radical element of Islam, which does exist. Otherwise, we could not have this problem. He pledged that he would not burn a Quran or engage in other provocative acts. He said the plans now call for just 4 members of his group Stand Up for America Now to occupy a grassy public median area across from the mosque. He added that his concern about radical Islam was broader than simply any activities in Detroit, adding that he had no animosity for people there. So the occupation is probably what got him, huh? Occupy a grassy public median. Is that,
well,
I mean, did he represent himself well during the trial, and is this something that how was he received in the courtroom?
He was received fine. Actually, Wayne Sapp and Pastor Jones did a very good job. I mean, the way that that statement is articulated when you read it, there's a lot going on in that statement. And he said, in essence, that he was not there to provoke, to have any provocative behavior. Now, interestingly enough, now you got to remember that Terry Jones and Wayne Sapp defended themselves without counsel. Now, Wayne Sapp, upon cross-examination for the Dearborn police chief, Ron Haddad, Ron Haddad, the police chief, begrudgingly testified that Pastor Terry Jones gave him no indication they were going to burn a Koran or do anything violent. Court records indicate Jones testified his intention was not to protest the mosque, but to protest jihad and Sharia. Now, Wayne Sapp cross-examined the police chief, Haddad, who he pressed it, and finally Sapp said, did Pastor Jones or I give you any indication that we were there to engage in any violence or provocative behavior? And you could see you could watch Haddad's facial expressions, that he was very upset being talked to in this manner, one, but he said no. So why was their permit denied? Because Jones, and they gave no indication that they were going to engage in any provocative or violent behavior. And the police chief corroborated that under oath on the stand. And that's something
that didn't matter.
No, it didn't. Apparently it didn't. That means that was police chief Haddad doing the bidding of the Muslim community over and above his duties as a police chief? And apparently it appears to me that he was. That he was doing the bidding of the Muslim machine in Dearborn.
Well, sure. I mean, you take the Acts 17, David Wood and his group, what happened in a public street during an Arab festival where they were just standing on the corner and people would come up to them and they were talking about Christianity and I guess they were proselytizing, not even proselytizing because they were just standing there, and Haddad and the mayor really twisted the facts. So how do you think Terry Jones could get a fair shake in Dearborn or Stan?
Well, actually, that is a great point. And the judge, now you got to understand, this is a jury trial at this point. They had 12 people come in for a regular jury. They called the jury down to 6 jurors plus one on reserve. Yeah,
right, now, wait. Can you? This is the one thing that I guess we're all having a problem comprehending.
Okay.
Why did Terry Jones have to submit to a jury trial if, in fact, he wasn't engaged in protesting or rallying against the law, but yet Wayne Todd had to go ahead and go before the courts?
Because
he threatened to breach the peace.
Right.
He threatened to breach the peace.
Right.
And that's
by saying if you show up without a permit, he was in essence breaching their law of whatever Allen said, 1839 or whatever the heck it was written.
1857.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it gave the authorities the ability, this law from 1857, how broadly that they interpreted it, it gave them the ability to be proactive and get these guys from keeping them from what they said that they were going to do because there was a potential breach of the peace.
Alan, do you know what the makeup of that 12 jurors was as far as religion? How many of which?
Well, you know, you can't really tell for sure. There was one woman with a hijab. There was one woman with a hijab, and she didn't make the cut. It appeared to me, just visually looking at the jury, we weren't allowed to film them, of course, but we were obviously could see them. They appeared to be all Caucasian.
Well,
now,
this is what they wanted to think.
Was
yes,
it appeal made? Was it appeal made to get at their strings that violence was going to outbreak as a result of Terry Jones being there?
Well, that's what the whole thing, that was the whole point the prosecutor was trying to make, is a threat of violence, but the prosecutor was stressing the location of where the protest was not conducive to handling that many people that the city estimated could be as many as 10,000. So they offered Pastor Jones that he could go to any of the public free speech zones and protest away. They said, we're not trying to limit your speech. It's the location that we're having a problem with.
Well, you know what, Al? That's bogus. That is simply bogus. First of all, the county has allowed, Wayne County and the city of Dearbornistan had allowed the building of one of the largest mosques in the state of Michigan. That thing is humongous compared to any other mosque that's around. So that particular mosque is what?
I'm sorry. It's roughly 90,000 square feet.
90,000 square feet. And they're trying to say that five people that were going to protest across the street could not be handled, when in fact that mosque houses 90,000 square feet? Holy crap.
Well, the question that I had, the mosque was the last building to be built on this Alta Road. I want to know how they were able to get permits to build the mosque in the first place without having the road access to handle all of the thousands of people that were going to be going to the mosque in the first place.
Exactly.
Oh, I can answer that question, Al.
Yeah.
Well, see, if they hadn't been given the permits to build, they threatened 300-400, death threats to all the people in charge. So rather than dealing with the death threats, they just decided to make the problem go away and let them build.
Exactly, and that's the explanation that I got. We got a tour from a person who has lived there practically their whole lives in the Dearborn area, and I asked her that question, and she said, yeah, they started construction on a Sunday without getting any permits. They brought the bulldozers in, started doing their thing, and then the neighbors called up code enforcement and said, hey, what's going on here? Code enforcement goes over there and goes, what are you guys doing? You don't have any permits or anything. You kept it stopped building. And the Muslims at the mosque said, what are you, not allowing us to build because we're Muslim? And they played the race. Not that Islam is a race. Yep. But they played that card, and then miraculously all the permits came through very easy, and they continued construction until completion.
Isn't it amazing how you can bend and break the law by right away screaming, you're picking on us because we're Muslim, but God forbid you want to speak out with your own freedom of speech.
Right.
Just phenomenal.
Right. Now, that story is hearsay. I did not corroborate that with court records or any documentation from the city. I just want to make that clear. But it does seem consistent.
That's the exact same story that I heard from someone that grew up in Dearborn Heights.
Okay, so that's how I heard it, and it did seem consistent.
I didn't hear it on Sunday, but I did hear that they actually broke ground and started construction without having so much as even one surveyor out there from the city to approve it, and right away screamed, oh, so you're stopping us because we're Muslim? I heard the exact same thing.
Right, and it's pulling out the race card, even though Islam is not a race. But
exactly.
It's pulling out the fear and intimidation card. So they were successful building the mosque, so, that's a winning strategy. They need to keep on using it until somebody puts the brakes on and says, no more. Kind of like what they did in France with the burqa ban. All of a sudden, they allowed them to come in, wear the burqas and the niqabs, and finally the French government said, no, that is enough. You must have your face because it's a personal safety risk for the other Frenchmen who live there. The government said, no more burqas. And what was the result? Al-Qaeda declared war on France.
Intimidation.
Yeah. Push until you get stopped, and then you fight.
So let's see if I have it right now. You have the issue of Muslims not being – the threat of Muslims not being civilized, and they're told that we're all told about that these people are moderate Muslims, but the threat of violence is really what this all came down to, and it wasn't a fact of violence on the part of Terry Jones. It was on the part of violence on the part of Muslims in Dearbornistan.
Yeah, you got it.
And you know what, Vito? This is exactly, if you've seen David's last, and I forgive me, I don't remember his name. I just got a brain fart. David from Act 17 Apologetics.
David Wood.
What?
David Wood, thank you. If you've seen Dave Wood's last video where he explains about Sharia in America, which was so very well done, it's short, sweet, and to the point. He talks about how we can't allow American Bibles in Afghanistan because it might incite violence, but we can't allow the burning of the Quran, even though we burned those Bibles, because it might incite violence. And it's just that twofold coin that is so obvious. It's fun, you know. If it weren't real, it would be funny.
Well, you want to hear a funny story?
Yes.
When I'm sitting in the trial, there was this couple there, a very distinguished black gentleman with the full kufi and the full dress and all that. And next to him was his wife, who was in the full niqab. She was very Sharia compliant. She was wearing the gloves. However, she did have a lot of eye makeup on. She was Sharia compliant until you got to her feet and she was wearing pumps, but I'll let that go. So anyway, we were interviewing them, and then at one point of the trial, I was sitting next to them in the courtroom, so we got to talking, and I said, oh, because they had media badges, and I said, oh, what media are you with? And they go, we're with Blog Talk Radio, and I'm like, what, really? I said, what show are you with? And I tried looking up the show. They didn't tell me the truth. They said TGM, but I got a feeling it's a Muslim 360 is who these people were with. Now, I'm just guessing, but it was really funny that Blog Talk Radio was mentioned in the courtroom as a media source, and they received media badges by having a show on Blog Talk. So
I love it. Wow. I love it. Blog Talk is an equal opportunity employer. See that?
We got the clout, man.
Yeah, but I just found humorous because, you know, here on the Radio Jihad Network, we've learned what Sharia-compliant clothing is for the most part. And it's all about modesty in the women. But this woman was wearing eye makeup like you would not believe and these pump shoes. I was laughing to myself because it was Sharia-compliant to a certain point and then it just dropped off the radar screen. It was just a funny little side note.
Well, you know what, Alan? It is interesting because the fact is it's the Muslim to speak. You have a situation where the Muslims were going to create havoc in an American city where it's obvious now there's a pattern in Dearbornistan of denying someone their constitutional right of free speech. The constitutional right of peaceably to assemble.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the issue of where Muslims can pretty much do anything they want in the city because when they threat violence, the city mayor, the city chief of police reacts to squash the United States Constitution in favor of Islam not having a violent pattern.
Right, and you hit the nail
and set the precedent for the rest of the United States wherever there's a Muslim community.
Yeah, and both you guys are hitting the nail on the head, and you know, I kind of like to. There's one more part of this story that never made it into the press, and this is this is fresh information, and the video can be seen at theunitedwest.org. That's www.theunitedwest.org. Now, in this video, J. Mark Campbell got video of one of the jurors and a friend of the juror as they were leaving the courtroom after the verdict. Now, to set this story up, before the verdict was read, the judge issued orders to the jury on what they can and cannot judge the case on. And one of these edicts from the judge to the jury was, quote, nonviolent expression of an unpopular or unwelcome political or religious belief by itself is not enough to find a breach of the peace, even if the expression of that belief causes someone else to react with anger or alarm.
Nonviolent.
Right. Yeah, I'll read it again.
Yeah.
Okay, this is what the judge told the jury. So when they review all the evidence, they have to take this part of it, the equation, out of their verdict, that the nonviolent expression of an unpopular or unwelcome political or religious belief by itself is not enough to find a breach of the peace, even if the expression of that belief causes someone else to react with anger or alarm. So what the judge was telling the jury is that you need to, when you weigh the evidence to come to your verdict, you cannot take into account how your verdict will affect people outside of the courtroom. So in other words, if you vote yes, that Terry Jones should be allowed to protest, and you base that on the evidence, but you don't vote no in order to because you're afraid that something might happen. You have to
right.
vote
so wait,
on
wait,
the
wait,
evidence.
Wait. I gotta interrupt. This was the judge's instructions to the jury.
That is
when
correct.
The whole premise behind this case that the prosecution brought
right.
was because it might create violence. We're going to need to hire or bring in all these different law enforcement people and agencies.
Mm-hmm.
But when you go and make your verdict, don't base it on whether or not it could create something violent.
Right. Yep, because a nonviolent... it's so incredibly ironic that the nonviolent... This is the judge telling the jury. Nonviolent expression of an unpopular or unwelcome political or religious belief by itself is not enough to find a breach of the peace. Now, a breach of the peace is what this whole case is about. Even
exactly.
if the expression of that belief causes someone else to react with anger or alarm, meaning the Muslim community. In other words, all the threats of violence from the Muslim community, you can't even put that into your head as you're coming to a verdict. Judge's orders. So when J. Mark Campbell got this video, that, because you have to understand, it was according to Mark, I was stuck in the courtroom, but J. Mark was out running around. After the verdict was read, everybody piled out of the courtroom. It was a zoo atmosphere. Well, ABC, all the big network news, they had all their cameras somewhere else. Now the jurors were coming out. So Mark realized, hey, for the real story, you don't go where the big cameras are. You go where nobody's at. And he did, and he got an interview with one of the jurors. Now, the juror told J. Mark Campbell, and you can go to the website to see it, essentially that when they made their verdict, it was unanimous that they were afraid that if they voted in favor of Pastor Terry Jones, allowing him to go there to protest, that it would be the spark that would ignite Dearborn. So they all voted against it based on that reason alone. Or that was an overwhelming reason why they voted against Pastor Jones, in direct violation of the judge's order. So in effect, the video that J. Mark Campbell got is cause for jury nullification, not to mention all the First Amendment laws within this case that are so blatant that even the liberals, the Detroit Free Press, was going, what kind of case is this? The ACLU filed an amicus brief in favor of Terry Jones because his free speech was being violated.
Amazing.
That's Radio Jihad Network news that you will not hear anywhere else. That is fresh stuff, my friends.
So now the jury, how long did it take the jury to deliberate this?
It actually took them close to 2 hours, if I recall. I figured it would be It was well over an hour. I figured it would be 15 to 30 minutes, and it just kept going and going and going. So it was close to 2 hours, I believe. Yeah, it was late. It was definitely late.
Well, and now the jury comes back, and they come up with this figure of $45,000?
Not the jury. That was the police. That was the peace bond. That was an order. That is what the city of Dearborn would have required from Pastor Jones to have. Jones would have had to pay that to the city so they could manage his protest. So that $46,000 is just a way to stifle someone's free speech because it's not up to, he was on county property, it's not up to you to have to pay the city so you can exercise your First Amendment right.
So the city of Dearbornistan was pulling out all the stops to really stifle Jones and to circumvent the First Amendment of the U.S. Constitution. But, Al, you had mentioned when we talked about this yesterday a little bit, you had said that after the verdict was read, there was a rally by Muslims.
We didn't happen to make it over to the mosque after the verdict was read because we had to get the video to the where we needed to get it. But as we were watching the news, there was an impromptu rally in the exact area where Pastor Jones was supposed to have his, where he was going to have his protest. Now, this was an impromptu rally. There just happened to be barricades up that we saw on the news that the city had put up there, I guess, in anticipation of Jones going out there. But it was predominantly a Muslim celebration for the verdict against Terry Jones in the area where Terry Jones was supposed to speak. So my question is, did they create a safety hazard to the city by being there, however many people were there? The answer is yes. Why didn't the city of Dearborn arrest those people who went there impromptu without a permit to stand in celebration of the verdict if they were being truly consistent? Could it have been that the people who were threatening the peace were now being peaceful and congratulatory and celebratory because they won? And if they had lost, they would have been violent and possibly caused damage and could have harmed people and threatened violence.
Well, wait a minute. Then Terry Jones could have still been charged if there had been violence with the outcome of the jury trial. There could have still been violence, and therefore Terry Jones could have been charged with breaking the peace.
Yeah. Now here you're touching on something that's very, very interesting. And it's interesting to me because studying how the media has been portraying the story, how the city of Dearborn reacted, is that, okay, Jones never threatened anybody. When Jones burned his Koran, it was his property to do with as he wanted. I don't condone what he did. I just want to make that clear, but he did have that First Amendment right to do so. It was his property. He never threatened anybody. He never hurt anybody. He never threatened to hurt anybody. He never threatened to riot. He just wanted to exercise his free speech, his words only. Now, why was Terry Jones on trial? He had 300 to 400 death threats against him by the Muslim community. Now, how this story should have been reported is that those who are making the threats should be held responsible for their actions, period. Not Terry Jones, because he never, even Chief Haddad, Police Chief Haddad, said that there was no provocation of violence on their behalf. All the threats of violence were on the Muslim side of this issue.
No, continue on. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
Yeah, so what we need to do in our minds is we need to flip this dynamic over, and that the American people need to say the problem is not so much with Terry Jones, whether you agree or disagree with him. The problem is with those who threaten the violence. And that is where the police should have been, how this should have been handled. Terry Jones threatened no violence. The police should have issued the permit. And then the police should have been there to protect Terry Jones from those who were threatening the violence against him. And arrested those who were threatening the violence rather than arresting Terry Jones and making him the so-called cause of the violence by his actions. Does that make any sense?
Well, then, yeah, it does, because there's something called the Amendment 1 of the United States Constitution. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances. So Terry Jones was looking to peaceably assemble, and he was looking to for the express purpose of freedom of speech, his expression of freedom of speech.
Right. Now it goes
and
back.
He was denied that under a United States city.
Mm-hmm.
He was denied that right.
Yeah. Terry, he's got an open and shut case against the city of Dearborn, and the Thomas More Law Center looks like they're going to take the case. And frankly, they should sue with all of their might and power, sue the city of Dearborn, and personally sue Police Chief Haddad, the prosecutor, and the judge, because the judge should have thrown this case out from the very beginning. But it became a show. And then what was very interesting, too, that you'll never hear in the press is that in the courtroom, the judges, not that this means anything, it's just an observation, take it what you will, the judge's assistant was wearing a Sharia-compliant hijab. Now, should he have recused himself because of the Muslim, non-Muslim element of this case? I think so. So...
Well, you know, I have a problem also with something that just continues to be an Islamic issue here in the United States of America.
Mm-hmm.
And it's Article 6, Clause 2, this Constitution and the laws of the United States, which shall be made in pursuance thereof, and all treaties made, or which shall be made under the authority of the United States, shall be the supreme law of the land, and the judges in every state shall be bound thereby, anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding.
Right.
Article 6, Clause 2 of the United States Constitution has been violated in addition to the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment.
Mm-hmm. And it goes back to what I had said earlier regarding on cross-examination with the Dearborn Police Chief Haddad, because during cross-examination, Dearborn Police Chief Ron Haddad testified that Al-Kazwini, he's the imam or the sheikh of the Islamic Center of America, stated that for some members of his mosque, burning the Quran was considered a crime. At that point, Police Chief Ron Haddad has stated, pardon me, Mr. Kazwini, but burning a Quran is not a crime in America. It may be a crime in your community. And if you act on that as such as being a crime, and if you act in any way that is threatening to the pastor over this, you will be arrested as threatening speech. That is how Dearborn Police Chief Ron Haddad should have responded to that comment. And then he went on to say burning the Quran is worse than 1,000 deaths. And then another interesting story?
I would love another interesting story. Firsthand, Al. First, give us an interesting story about Dearbornistan, Michigan.
All right. Well, J. Mark Campbell and I, we went to the Islamic Center of America. We had an hour and a half interview. And at this time, I'm going to leave the person unsaid because there may be some future action involved with this person.
Would you classify this person as a moderate Muslim?
Oh, yes. This was the nicest man you would ever want to meet. He was kind and gentle and had no act. He was the perfect representative of a moderate Muslim.
I love you.
Okay.
Well, anyway,
he's a moderate Muslim.
He was the quintessential poster boy for moderate Islam. Well, after the interview was over, we went out to the car. This gentleman had to go out to the car with us. And J. Mark Campbell asked him, he said, "Excuse me, but what would you do if Pastor Jones, right across the street, roughly 350 feet in that grassy knoll area where Pastor Jones is going to have his protest," he said, "Sir, what would you do if Pastor Jones right now was over there burning a Koran?" This guy responded back. He said, "I would put a bullet into him myself." Close quote.
You mean to say if you asked the question, if Terry Jones had burned a Koran in that grassy knoll, what he would
at
have done?
At that moment.
What
was.
At that
at
moment.
At that point in time, if he saw him burning a Koran in that area across from the mosque, what would he do? And the guy said, I would put a bullet in him myself. And we were stunned. Unfortunately, we didn't have the camera rolling, but we do have it, definitely corroborated. So then the guy said it again. Got him to say it again. Now,
so moderate Muslims would deny a person's First Amendment right because they were burning a Koran.
Well, yeah, that story just illustrates that what you see from some Muslims, and this person was extremely moderate, what they tell you to your face and what they feel in their heart may be two different diametrically opposed things. And that's what we witnessed. That was our observation from a live witness, and that is what we saw. And we were stunned, quite frankly, beyond belief. But that's just an interesting story. That's an aside note, but essentially, end of the story was Pastor Jones' First Amendment rights were grossly violated. The liberals, the Detroit Free Press, NPR were there. We spoke to the reporters. They actually reported up there that Pastor Jones's free speech rights, First Amendment rights, were grossly violated. So from this whole thing, all of a sudden now burning the Koran is like no big deal. No one cares about that so much anymore. Pastor Jones has now become the poster boy for First Amendment. And part of it was due to their acumen within the courtroom in taking on the city of Dearborn. Even though they may have lost the verdict, which you found out later, the jury, I mean, I've read to you the judge's directives to the jury, which were not, according to the video, were not adhered to. And that it was fear and intimidation ruled the day.
So a United States citizen was denied his constitutional right of free speech to peaceably assemble by a court system in the United States and by a municipality of the United States. And nobody seems to see anything wrong with that because the threat of violence by Muslims was the reason to blame Terry Jones for his actions to rally or to hold a protest with five people in an American city on American soil exercising his First Amendment right of free speech to peaceably assemble.
Right. Now, how
I think I understand it.
Yeah, how it should have gone down, Vito and Gotti, it should have gone down like this. Pastor Jones should have gotten his permit to be able to protest, assuming that he wasn't going to do anything provocative or cause a breach of the peace, which the police chief did acknowledge during cross-examination. The threats came, 300 to 400 email threats or phone threats were directed at the pastor. That's Exhibit 1. Exhibit two is that Al-Khwazini, the leader of the mosque, had an implied threat in his wording that I read earlier. And then you've got the people threatening, the masses threatening violence against Pastor Jones. Now, how this whole thing should have gone down is, was that violence caused by Pastor Jones, or did the people who are committing the threats of violence have to take personal responsibility for their actions? And law enforcement should have been siding with Pastor Jones this whole time to protect him from those who were threatening the violence in the first place. Law enforcement should have gone after the Muslim community and said, if you do anything remotely violent, you will be thrown in jail. That's how it should have gone down. But the Muslim machine in Dearborn, the Muslim majority, through fear and intimidation, at the end of the day, forced the police chief, whether they knowingly or unknowingly did it, the police chief, the prosecutor, and the judge were enforcing Sharia blasphemy laws on Pastor Jones. They were doing the bidding of the Islamic community in violation of the Constitution of the United States on the First Amendment and Article 6, as you mentioned earlier.
Hold your base, a good point in the chat room. Now, he says,
yep.
What happened? What Dearborn represents is what happens in America when Muslims get numbers. Bottom line, when your city gets to be 10% or 20% Muslims, this will happen there. And, you know, using what you just said, if you want to use, we talked about this early in the show, and that was Muslim group threatens to turn Royal Wedding Day into a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
So using the analogy that you made, then actually in the United Kingdom, England should call off the royal wedding because Muslims plan to create chaos, havoc, or to create it into to turn this whole event into a nightmare. Therefore, with Muslims being about 5% of or 8% of the population in the United Kingdom, in London, then therefore they should probably not have this wedding.
Well, that's what the Muslims would like. That's what they're trying to do by threatening violence against the wedding. Because the wedding.
But isn't
to
that
them,
exactly what happened with Terry Jones, though?
Yeah, on a much smaller scale, because Terry Jones is an easy target. In fact, what's really interesting, God, I wish we only got a couple of minutes, Ann Barnhart, who we had on the show a couple of weeks ago, the guy he had on her show, she did the same thing that Terry Jones did and burned the Quran, and what happened to her? Nothing. People were afraid of her because she burned the Quran and says, you don't like it. Here's where I live in Boulder, Colorado. You come to my house. I've got a pink M16 that's locked and loaded and ready to go.
Yeah.
And she articulated her point in an intellectually honest and forthright manner. And the press left her alone. CARE left her alone. The Muslims left her alone because they feared her. Pastor Jones is an easy target because they just because he is, just by his look, his talk.
He's a white male.
Yeah. And I think that's an interesting dynamic that never made it into this story as well.
You know, we have a little bit over a minute left, and I want to thank Iggy Mom, Hasidus Holger, Reese Cup, Tommy Hunt, our guests in the chat room. They've been offering some interesting dialogue in there with regards to through this discussion now. I just think it's amazing. In a United States city where the threat of violence by a majority of the residents, it is now Terry Jones's fault as to the reason that the violence is going to erupt. The fact is that Muslims can't act civilized. That's what that boils down to. And so you have a city of Dearborn is going to collectively deny a United States citizen's right of free speech, their constitutional right to assemble. So we have a minute left. I mean, is that, in a nutshell, is that's what happened in Dearborn, right?
No, that's my view. You articulated it beautifully.
Well, the articulation of this is incredible. We'll have to continue this discussion tomorrow. I want to thank everybody in the chat room. Gotti, thank you very much. America Akbar, Thursday evenings from 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with the lovely Reese Cup hosting the boards. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening tonight. We'll be back tomorrow evening from 6 p.m. to 7:30 Eastern Standard Time on the Radio Jihad Network. Our website, www.radiojihad.org. Listen to our other Radio Jihad Network friends. So for Alan K. Gotti, I'm Vito. God bless our troops and God bless America. Radio Jihad, striving to educate America.
Bye-bye.
Wow, Al. This is like, it. You know, some people may not understand the depth of this whole thing. This is actually very troubling, given the amount of cities in the United States that are starting to have a large Muslim enclave, and it goes to one, the lack of assimilation by Muslims, and then also the willingness of the government to, in those respective municipalities, to push aside the U.S. Constitution. I mean, isn't it?
The scary part is that the way that our society is set up, with the judicial branch of the government and the enforcement mechanism being law enforcement, what we witnessed in Dearborn is we saw law enforcement through Police Chief Haddad, we saw the prosecutor through Moran, the public prosecutor, and the judge gang up on one man in violation of the First Amendment. These are the mechanisms that are supposed to be enforcing the Constitution of the United States of America, and they violated their oath of office to uphold the Constitution of the United States of America. All these people should lose their jobs and be kicked out of office, along with the mayor, for allowing it to happen, of Dearborn.
Okay, so if the Muslim community is about 40,000, 43,000, and the entire city population of Dearbornistan is 98,000 approximately, so you've got about 55,000 non-Muslims in the city. How many of them would be voters of each block? Can it be done? And does anybody in Dearbornistan have the backbone to take on the Islamic community, given how five people were going to hold a protest, and suddenly the whole city is unnerved because Muslims threaten violence, which is in their gene.
Yeah, and the answer to that, I believe, is no. And I say that because of what we learned about the jury's views of why they voted how they did with their verdict against Pastor Jones, because they feared that this case would be the spark that would ignite Dearborn into violence. That was the fear of the jury. The jury is made up of people who live in the community, and that fear is real in their eyes, and they did not want to see that happen in their community over this. They refused to take a stand for what was right out of fear and intimidation.
It's a sad day. But when you have if I understand it right, Chief Ron Haddad is a Muslim, and
Let me qualify that.
He represents
himself as a Lebanese-born Christian.
Okay.
I don't believe it.
And I was talking to some folks, and they said what should have been asked of Chief Haddad during cross-examination is, do you have any family over in Lebanon? And if he had answered yes, there's a possibility that he is acting the way that he is for fear of protection of his family, because if he goes against the Muslim community, there is a very strong likelihood that the retribution would be against his family in Lebanon.
I don't believe it.
That's just a speculation that was going around, and people were asking that question, and I thought it was a very valid question.
I believe he's either Muslim or he's a closet Muslim. And the people I spoke to when I wrote my article about Dearborn said he was Muslim. And I'll tell you why I don't buy it, because he holds the highest office of law enforcement in Dearborn, and he could stick by the law, tooth and nail, other by no other excuse than he has to, because he's a sworn officer to uphold the law. And instead, each and every time, proof with Dearborn and Act 17 and Dave Wood and Nabil Qureshi and everybody else was how he lied on the stand and twisted the truth to try and put them in jail. I don't believe it.
Well, I mean, you have, you know, that's a valid point, and how they twisted Nabil and David Wood. I can't argue with that, Gotti.
I can't either. That is a very valid point.
And the other thing is holding the fact that of his, you know, how many years has he been in law enforcement to gain the office of chief? How many years has he lived in the Dearborn area? I am sure that if he had family in Lebanon, he could certainly, with all of his connections, get them out of there if he was really that concerned about repercussions because of what he does.
That's
exactly.
True, too.
That's a good point. God, Gotti, Jesus, you're putting, dang, just kind of rained on our parade here tonight. Christ.
I'm sorry. But Alan, I do have a question for you, and then I got to run because it's after 7:30 and I know we're still recording. I want to know what kind of paperwork you needed to get in and then back out of Dearborn being a member of the tribe.
Well, it's funny you mention that. During the interview at the mosque with this gentleman that we have yet to name, he kept asking me, he said, "Well, what's your religion?" And I said, "Well, it's irrelevant." And I said that three times, and he just kept pushing. I said, it was a very amenable conversation. I said, "You're like a dentist pulling teeth." I said, I'm Jewish. And then the Jewish theme started, and I said, "This is exactly why I did not mention to you that I was Jewish, because now it became about me being Jewish." And I said, "You're like a dentist pulling teeth." But what was interesting that I didn't mention on the show is that he kept saying, you know, in Islam we believe that if you kill one person, it's like slaying all of humanity. I said, "Oh, you mean verse 5:32? And then I said, "Well, why don't you read here? Here's a." I said, "Do you have a Quran?" And he said, "Yeah, here's one." I said, "Why don't you read 5:33 for me?" And 5:33 is where it says, "If you're committing mischief, you're either crucified or your right arm is chopped off with your left leg, or vice versa." And I said, "Can you explain to me that passage?" And he said, "Well, really," he didn't read it out loud, of course. And he said, "Well, what that means to me is that you can, if you get slapped in the face once, you turn your cheek. If you get slapped again, you turn your cheek again, and then finally you have to retaliate." That, he said, that's what that verse meant to him.
Yeah.
Wow, you had your hands full, man. But you had some candid interviews, though. I mean, you had some candid answers to the questions that you guys asked, and particularly that Terry Jones one, where if he would have seen Terry Jones burning a Bible in that grassy knoll area while he was protesting, he would have went out there and shot him in the head.
Yeah, he said, "I would have put a bullet into him myself," which is chilling. It's chilling. That's a total disregard for the First Amendment of the United States of America. We do not operate under those rules. That is inciting violence.
Inciting violence? Hell, it's a death threat.
Yeah, it is a death threat.
Wow. Wow.
Somebody said that about any elected official, you'd have the Secret Service knocking on your door just for making the comment.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe we should file something with the Dearborn Police.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Well, Jones is going back on Friday to protest in one of the free speech areas in front of the courthouse.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he'll be back Friday. No, free speech zone, he can do it.
Al, what are these free speech zones like? I mean, when you say free speech zone, what do they look? I mean, what are they? Are they already petitioned off areas, or are they in the middle of nowhere where no one really can see what's going on? What exactly are these free speech zones?
Well, as it is explained in the court, there's four or five of them. I don't remember exactly throughout the city. One of them is at the courthouse. Where on the courthouse property, I don't know exactly.
Okay.
But it's they call it a permit-free speech zone, to where you do not have to get a permit to speak.
Yeah, you know where that is, Al? It's in the janitorial closet in the basement of the courthouse.
Would not surprise me one bit.
Wow.
Gentlemen, I've got to run. It has been a pleasure. Alan, great story. And
thank you, Gotti.
You're free Thursday night. We would love to have you on America Akbar with Gotti and Rishi, and you can elaborate more on your Dearbornistan trip. So,
I would love to, but I've got a meeting
here
on Thursday.
Go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure you got something more important to do.
Well, what's happening? There's a group that's bringing in Joseph Sabag to speak from the Zionist Organization of America. So I'll be there for that.
Oh, now you'll tell me the damn Zionists are more important. Here we go.
Yeah.
You and those Zionists, uh-huh.
There you go.
All right, gentlemen. You guys have a good night. Dito, thank you for the comment on my article. It was nice to see.
Oh, hey, my pleasure. That was a good article, man. I hope I didn't, you know, I get long-winded. I can't just answer like three or four sentences, you know, or
no,
one
sentence. No, I love the long-winded comments because they make a lot more sense than the short ones. So you get to get your point across. Initially, when I had the comment section on my website, it was limited to like 100 words or something, and I shut it down. I mean, you can write a whole book in there. It doesn't matter.
I'll try to keep it under 500 words.
Yeah, it's fine. Whatever. The article was actually short. I was not happy with it, but I did like the videos that I found. Did you see the two videos I posted?
Yes. Yes. I'll tell you, that very first one, I watched that one uninterrupted, and I'll tell you why. That's what got me charged up about the whole thing.
Yeah, that's one way to deal with your political opponent, isn't it? Just eliminate.
Yeah.
Literally.
What the hell?
Well, gentlemen, you have a fun-filled Radio Jihad kind of night, and if I'm around tomorrow, I will definitely join in.
All right,
fantastic.
Great.
Love to have you.
Al,
great
I'll talk to you later.
Night.
Good night.
All right, Gotti. Oh, my Gotti. See you tomorrow.
See
America
you tomorrow.
Ciao. Al, I'll talk to you later.
All right. Vito, have a good one, and
all right.
talk at you. Bye.
Ciao.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard-to-recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.